Welcome back for another helping of oysters, clams, and cockles presented by Bolin Media. I am Ross Bolin here with Barrett Dudley, and today we will be sharing our favorite TV shows and movies of 2023. Before we dive in and start with TV, Barrett, was there anything that surprised you as you went through and made your list of your favorite TV shows of this calendar year?
Well, I think that overall, I would say that I definitely found this year to be less rich in quality than last year.
Really?
And probably the years before that as well. Yeah, definitely. Like, when I got down to, in the past years, I love this episode, by the way. I love lists. I like retrospectives. I like looking back on the year that was. I like, you know, just organizing and compiling like things that you did or things that you watched. I love keeping this list of all the things that we're watching every year. So just a great episode. Happy to be here. But I look back at a few of my lists from the last few years, and just like, let me just read you 2022. 2022, I'll run these off real quick.
Okay.
From 1 to 10, mine was White Lotus, Andor, Euphoria, Severance, Better Call Saul, Hacks, Barry, The Bear, House of the Dragon, Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Like, I had House of the Dragon at number 9. Like, that's how good the TV year was last year.
Yeah.
And so when I got down to this year, I got to about 7, and then I kind of had to think about whether I just kind of wanted to cut my list off or what I should put there at the bottom. I think overall, like, now my top several, great shows, great quality, some stuff I really loved and can't wait to rehash with you. And then the other thing that I do have to mention, because it goes hand in hand with the bottom of my list, is that, and maybe it's a good place to launch in, I want you to give some overall thoughts as well.
Sure.
I missed stuff this year too. I definitely missed stuff. I'm not really sure why I watched less TV this year. I can't quite put a pin on it. I guess it was just a busy one for me, with a variety of things happening. But like, there's some stuff that I missed, and I'm going to address those things in my 10 spot. But what surprised you? Sounds like maybe the opposite.
I had the opposite revelation where, as I was putting together I kept it to 10, my 10 favorite TV seasons I watched this year. And I was kind of shocked by how high quality the overall list is. I also noticed that I watched an ungodly amount of television this year. Like, I have my best of.
Yeah.
And then I have 7 honorable mentions.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
And then 2 disappointments. And then 2. So my categories are best of, honorable mentions, disappointments, and then a category called I watched it, which means I don't really have much to say about it. I watched it, and it wasn't great, and it wasn't bad enough to be disappointing. I didn't have expectations going in, sort of, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And then, yes, to be fair, like, one of the reasons that I don't think I like classifying this episode as like the best of 2023 is because obviously we can't watch everything. Mm-hmm. So there is like 10 things on my list of to watch in the future,
right,
that came out this year.
Yeah.
And just acknowledging that up front, I think is
but
good.
Now are you including things on your list that didn't come out this year?
No.
Okay. All right.
No.
Yeah.
All of this is straight 2023.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So let's dive into TV.
Let's dive in.
Let's do it. Let's start with,
should we start with some honorable mentions that we mentioned?
Sure.
Like,
that gives away what's not going to be in the top 10,
that's
though.
That's true. That's true. Okay. All right. So do you want to start with number 10?
Yeah.
All right.
My number 10 is a season that we are still in the midst of,
uh-huh,
and it counts. It's The Gilded Age Season 2.
Oh, okay.
I have been...
The finale just dropped last night, though.
Yeah, I haven't watched it yet.
Right.
I have been pleasantly surprised with how good this show is. If you were a Downton Abbey person, you can remember when that show was firing on all cylinders, it's like this strange mix of like pleasantries and old-timey manners and weird shit, and then like real excitement that is built through the characters and the storylines that are going on throughout the course of the show. And The Gilded Age has accomplished that in a way that's even more interesting to me because it is New York. It is not, you know, old England or whatever. And I love it, man. Like, this season has been really, really cool. I kind of made fun of it when we were talking about it after I'd watched the first couple episodes, saying, like, we're just doing the same thing as last year, as last season. But in all fairness, it has gotten better week by week by week by week by week. And they have inserted some, like, real-life crazy drama and really interesting societal commentary about, like, this rich-ass family living in, like, a fucking, you know, several-million-dollar home in the middle of New York City, and then, like, the working man. And there's a point where the main character, or the main male character, all of his money, I should say the patriarch of the family that the show is, like, focused on, all of his money comes from the railroads. And then all the railroad workers are striking.
A rail man.
Yeah, yeah, sure. And he has to deal with that conflict, and it creates some, like, insane suspenseful moments. Yeah. And near-death experiences, and...
Oh, those railways, boy, they were dangerous in that their Gilded Age.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it turns out that some of these guys, like, when they did strikes,
yeah,
like, they were trying to force in scabs,
uh-huh,
and so the guys who were on strike were having to, like, basically stand up and form a militia,
uh-huh,
and keep the scabs from getting in.
Yeah.
And there's almost violence.
It was a dangerous time to be a scab.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You weren't just getting hooted and hollered at.
Right. You could get shot.
You could get shot. Somebody might pick up a rail stake, you know, that stakes the track down.
Yeah.
They might threaten to stake you.
Yeah. I mean, the people on strike are the ones that are the most in danger. Anyway, the point is, the show at face value, and if you only watch a couple episodes, you might get bored and trail off, but this season has been phenomenal. It would have landed somewhere in my top 10. I went ahead and slotted it in at 10 because, yeah, I haven't watched the finale, and it was good enough to earn a place in the list. So,
well, it's a good segue, because from everything that I've heard about Gilded Age, I think it's a show that I would absolutely like quite a bit.
I'm quite confident, yeah, you would, yeah.
And that's where we get to my number 10, because my number 10 is all the things that I missed.
Okay,
I'm cheating here,
not cheating. I like this.
This is a significant list, and this has never happened to me before, because there are seasons of shows that I missed that I have always loved that absolutely would have been eligible and could have cracked this list, like The Great, Perry Mason season 2, and The Righteous Gemstones. I have not gotten to any of those new seasons that released this year. And then there's stuff like that I've heard amazing things about that I'm pretty sure that I would really like, that also aren't on my list because I didn't watch them. That's like Beef, Special Ops Lioness, Gilded Age, Daisy Jones and the Six, Shrinking, all of which have become highly recommended and that I know have popped up on lists, you know, across the realm, as it were, in the last few weeks here. So that's my number 10, is because that's hand up. That's just on me. I just didn't get to as much stuff as I usually do this year. And I got to be better in 2024. You know, I don't like getting an INC, an incomplete, and that's what I, or a DNP, even worse, a did not play. And that's how I feel. That's kind of how I feel this year. So number 10 for me is just all the stuff that I missed that I know was great.
I like you slotting that in, though, because it, you know, one of those would have ended up in
right,
the top 10.
Totally.
Got to leave a space for him. My number 9 is Fargo season 5. And you may have noticed the two shows, 10 and 9 for me, neither of which have I finished yet.
Yeah.
But that's how good they both are. Fargo comes back with a vengeance in season 5, is fully back to having its fastball, made up for season 4. It's phenomenal. I'm loving it. And so it is my number 9, Fargo season 5.
Yeah, I get when we get to a show that's on both of our lists, I think we should just, whenever it pops up, we'll just talk about it.
Sure.
So I have Fargo at number 5 on my list.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, I did a little bit of catching up. I think there's 5 episodes out now, and I've watched 4 now.
Cool.
So this is, I'm going out on a limb by placing it that high.
Yeah.
But, and maybe it's recency bias, maybe it's the fact that it dropped after an extended period where there wasn't a lot happening.
Yeah, we were just talking about the strike
on the TV scape, and we were talking about the strike. And I think that the reason I have it on 5 is because it matches up with the top, with my other top shows, and that I am like I'm psyched to watch this show every week. I love what it's doing. It's such a return to form. It is the way that it's kind of thrilling me, the way that this season more than any of the others is going like really kind of full horror with it. Like, I'm looking over at Laura, and, like, half the time she's just, like, pulling the blanket up over her eyes. So it's really playing with genre in a way that I quite like. I've gotten now to the supernatural bit that we're playing with. Still don't know exactly what's happening there.
I don't think anybody does.
But look, you throw some occult, devil, demon worship, blood on the walls, hoodoo, ritualistic bullshit, and I'm like, yeah, that's good. That's True Detective type shit, you know what I mean?
It is.
Like, take me to Carcosa, baby.
Yeah, different version, but sort of in the same vein.
Yeah, so I'm really, really sucked in, and I mean, like, the performances from Juno Temple as Dot and John Hamm as Sheriff...
Sheriff Roy Tillman,
thank you, with the nipple rings. Like, oh my God, like, I'm just... I'm four episodes in, and I feel like I know these characters. Like, they feel very fully formed, and so I'm giving the show a ton of credit for kind of dropping out of from the rafters here in Q4 and surprising me and delighting me, and I'm rewarding it for that.
Yeah, part of the reason I'm rewarding it, I needed something to get me stoked at the end of the year, to get me excited about the finish line here. And Fargo has really accomplished that. The Gilded Age as well. And that's why they're in my top or my final two slots. But like you said, Juno Temple, she's incredible, man. Like, the backstory with this show is great. Like, because, you know, there's always like an upfront crime kind of situation. But then there's all this other stuff behind it that's a mystery that you're sort of unfolding as the season goes on.
Yeah.
And that story this season is really great. John Hamm is awesome. Joe Keery is awesome. Jennifer Jason Leigh is the one playing Dot's mother.
Yeah, that's the one performance that I'm not totally sure about.
She's a little weird.
She's kind of doing like her Minnesota accent is leaning a little bit too heavy into 1920s gangster.
Yeah. Look here, Shay.
So yeah, not totally sure about her, but I love
her lawyer's.
Her
awesome.
Lawyer's awesome. Yes, that guy Dave Foley. Dave Foley.
Yeah.
Yes, Kids in the Hall. Yeah, I don't know if you ever checked that show out when you were like 12 and just like surfing channels that you shouldn't be surfing.
Holy shit! Yeah, okay. I forgot about that guy.
Yeah, he's like great sketch comedian from the 90s. Yeah, but yeah, very excited to see how this one plays out, and I will be watching. My number nine is The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. This was season 5 in the final season that dropped this year. This is almost kind of like a lifetime achievement award. I loved this show. It was always a pleasure to watch. Rachel Brosnahan as the titular character is one of my favorite performances of this decade. And this season I thought was really, really, really good. Probably not as, you know, this season was so good in its like first season. And second as well.
The series.
Yeah. Yep. It's one of those shows where it's always hard to kind of like reach those, to kind of like climb back to those heights.
Yeah.
But this season did a really, really nice job of kind of like, I think hammering home the main relationship that this show was about, which was between, was Midge, the main character, the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and her manager, Susie. And that's what it all came down to. And they wrapped that up in a way that felt earned and felt complete and, you know, kind of had a bittersweet nature to it, which I feel like is, you know, we'll get to some shows that also wrapped up this year and here in a bit, I'm sure. But that's always like a, you know, it's weird to say that that's the right way for a show to end. But I think that's typically how life goes, right? Is that endings are bittersweet. They're never they don't feel like they're not always super happy with the cherry on top, and you got everything that you ever wanted, and nothing bad ever happened.
Yeah, total like, satisfaction is
total
rare.
Total satisfaction is rare.
It's very rare.
So even like looking back to a show like Friends, right? Like, yeah, everybody kind of ends up in the right spot, but it's bittersweet because everybody's moving away and they're not going to be hanging out with each other anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Like life goes on.
Right.
And so this show did, you know, I think it ended in a way that made sense, and I loved it. It's one of my favorite shows of the last like 5-10 years. Great one for anybody that needs something to watch and wants something that there's a lot to binge, a lot to chew on. Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. If you've never seen it, you know, put it in the hopper.
Five seasons.
Five
and
seasons.
Now it's done.
Yep.
The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel is on my list of things to watch.
Yeah.
because of how highly you've spoken of it, how highly my mother has spoken of it. And just it's obviously done very well, been critically acclaimed and well watched throughout its run of five seasons.
All right, what's your number 8?
My number 8 is Silo season 1.
All right.
It made it.
I had this on my honorable mentions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought through it though, and I feel like with hindsight,
yeah,
with some breathing room, it wasn't the craziest, most fantastic thing I've ever watched. But I thought it was definitely worthy of a spot on my top 10 list of things I watched in 2023. Like, I really enjoyed it. I think I was probably, maybe we collectively were a little hard on it.
I think so.
And that made me want to slot it in here. Look, it's my first slot of shows that are finished. Everything else on my list is things that are done, finished,
okay. Watched
entirely. So not like Fargo, which is still going, or The Gilded Age, which just finished. But I think, somewhere in the 8, 9, 10, it was where it was going to end up.
Yeah.
Toward the bottom, admittedly. But it was good enough. And I was kind of shocked as I was surfing around the internet looking at everybody's top TV show lists.
How high this show was.
I mean,
lists.
It was just everybody kind of was including it. It was on, I saw a lot of Reddit threads that, people were able to comment and then share their top shows. A ton of people included Silo, and it kind of made me reconsider.
I'm glad you mentioned this. I decidedly chose to not let that affect where I was putting it.
Yeah.
It probably would have been my 10. If I hadn't cheated and put all the stuff that I missed, I would have slotted it in at 10 because it's first on my honorable mentions.
Yeah.
But I do think you're absolutely right. I think that had I watched this show without covering it for the podcast and kind of really dissecting it on a week-to-week basis or two episode at a time basis like we did, I probably wouldn't have been as hard on it.
Yeah.
Because we're podcasters. We're looking for nits to pick, especially that's how we...
Well, we're judging everything against the best, right?
That's how
we do our thing.
And we've got a lot of time to cover, and we're taking phone calls, and we're doing, it's just a lot. So we do tend to, on shows that are not nines or tens, right? It's easy to kind of to kind of downgrade a show rather than upgrade it. So I agree with what you're saying. I was surprised to see it so high on a lot of lists out there. And it was a lot of fun. I'm stoked for season 2. I'm glad that we're getting more of it. But I just couldn't quite bring myself to put it on my top 10.
Doesn't surprise me that it's an honorable mention for you. I could have gone either way.
Yeah.
But it's my number 8.
All right. My number 8 is Jury Duty.
Okay.
Yeah. There are some other shows that I guess get considered comedies. One other one that's pretty high on my list that I would call a comedy, but it's the only one here that I would call a light show.
Sure.
It felt good. No darkness in this show.
No heaviness. No heaviness, weight.
Just light.
Yeah.
It's a little shining beacon out there in a year where the news was awful, because that's just pretty much how they always
are. That's what we do now
at this point. Yeah.
That's how we do.
And so it's nice to have stuff like this that reminds you that humanity can be an overall good.
We can be decent rather than
an overall evil. The James Marsden of it all, just a great scene for him, you know what I mean?
Great
look for James Marsden. And then my guy Ronald,
the goat.
This show, it needs all the credit in the world for picking the right guy.
Yes,
I don't know what the vetting process was like.
I went through 2,500 people,
or who they had in the room to make the right decision. But my God, did they make the right decision? And it earned a spot on my list because I think it was the brightest spot of my TV year, whereas it just felt good. You didn't have to think except for to enjoy yourself and enjoy what was unfolding on the screen.
Good old fashioned funnies.
Yeah.
It's ironic because I bumped this to my honorable mentions, and I did it because I was weighing it basically against Silo, and I was asking myself what deserves more credit. And this is just the way I did my list. It's no offense to you, obviously, Barrett, but it wasn't important enough.
Yeah.
Is the only way I know how to put it. Your argument totally stands.
Yep.
This was the lightest, probably just most straightforwardly enjoyable thing I watched all year. I loved Jury Duty. It was awesome. I ranted about it when I watched it. I think I talked you into watching it.
Yeah.
I just, my list is a place for prestige.
Oh, I get that. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I had to honor that, and I had to bump it, and I feel worse about it now than I already did because of your thoughts
well, no,
on it.
No, but this is why it's so nice to have two lists.
It is.
We tackle these from we each go into them. We don't talk to each other about what we're putting on here. We make our own evaluations and our own rules, and that this is why the lists are good.
I love this episode. Yeah. I love doing this show every year. The version of it where we get to talk about all the things we watched is so much fun. But yeah, so it made my honorable mentions. I love Jury Duty, not taking anything away from it at all. My number seven is Beef.
Okay.
And this was a tough one to slot, man, because I was it's something about Netflix that makes me not take it as seriously. It's so fucked up. But at one point, it was in my honorable mentions, and then I was like rehashing everything in my mind. I took this ridiculously seriously, and it was super good and super dark and heavy at times, but also very, very funny, extremely well acted. It was different than a lot of what I watched this year and a lot of that I've ever seen in the same category. Kind of a fresh spin on like almost like a Breaking Bad type of situation. So I thought Beef was great.
Because it was on Netflix, did you binge watch it? Did you watch it really quickly?
No. Okay. No, I spaced it out a bit because it was extremely anxiety-inducing.
All right.
And typically with those kinds of shows now, I try to show my mental health some respect and space them out.
Yeah.
Instead of doing what old Ross would have just fucking watched this thing in a day and then been a mess for 2 weeks. But I spaced it out a bit. I probably finished it in... I want to say 2 or 3 weeks, watched it with my wife. That's the other thing. I can never just like straight binge things with her. Like it has to be spaced because she doesn't watch TV like that.
Right.
We don't have time like that anymore with kids.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, Beef was phenomenal. I very highly recommend it. It was truly something to behold. I don't think there's going to be a season two. There shouldn't.
Here's my argument.
There shouldn't be. That was it. It's over. Phenomenal story. Weird, ambiguous ending that you kind of have to judge for yourself.
I believe that the showrunner, the creator, has said that he has an outline for two more seasons if things come together. But I haven't seen it, so I can't judge. But it felt like one of those ones based on what I heard and read that made sense as a one season kind of like wrapped up show.
I would love if they left it alone.
Yeah.
But that was my number seven.
My number seven is that this is where I have Foundation.
Okay.
Season two was a 2023 show. I think that, I'd be curious what I felt about season two had I watched season one when it came out.
Yeah, me too.
You know, because I definitely think that watching those in succession, this is kind of like an award for Foundation in general. It's kind of an award for it. The spot on this list is because I just watched both seasons.
Yeah.
And I really liked it. A lot, and I liked what each of the seasons did individually. You know, we've talked about that a lot on the podcast, but season one was like very conceptual, very cerebral, and then season two was like way more plot driven, character driven. And so it was kind of cool to see them transform. I don't know how good this show is.
You can't tell?
I can't. I don't think I can tell. I think that I really, really, really like the Jared Harris and the Lee Pace and the Laura Hurd, Demerzel. I believe it's Laura Hurd. Those performances are all really, really phenomenal, and I think they carry the show, especially in season two. Laura Byrne.
B-I-R-N.
When we get there. But look, this show is doing an incredible job of world building. I'm hook, lined, and sinkered on it. I really like what they're doing with the you know, I know that the Kleonic dynasty is like apart from the books. It's different. It's something that they kind of came up with for the show. And I can't believe a show looks this good without spending Game of Thrones or Lord of the Rings money. And it's just I feel like it's rich. I feel like it can say a lot. I feel like it can go anywhere. And I'm very excited to kind of have this as a show to keep returning to. So I don't know if I feel like seven is the right place for it. Again, this is one where like maybe I'm weighting it higher because we spent so much time on it. But I think it's got a lot of value.
I plopped it in at number four, man.
Yeah.
It made my top five. I did have to stop and really make sure I was separating my judgment of seasons one and two, because I thought season one was good. I thought season two had slower, lower points. But overall, and especially with the three, four episodes at the end of season two, I thought the show elevated itself to great. Foundation is on Apple TV Plus, by the way. And yeah, season two just left me really, really excited for what season three is going to bring. And that played a big part in my rankings. Like, how stoked am I for the next season of this show?
Yeah,
if
totally.
There is a next season, totally. Right? So with Foundation, there is a next season. Season three has been renewed. And I, admittedly, it was a much smaller audience for us. Like, we can always judge the size of a show based on how many people tune in to listen to us talk about it.
Right.
And Foundation was smaller than I expected. And I think it kind of flew under the radar. And it is definitely complicated. I think I can see how at different points people they might have lost some people, right, with just the focus on some of the more cerebral stuff, like you said, in season one. And then in season two, kind of this weird shift into like a more campy Star Wars type area with some of the characters, where at first you're kind of like, this isn't the same vibes, but then it smooths out over the course of season two. So it ended up higher for me, ended up in my top five. I wasn't necessarily shocked by that, but it was something that took a bit of thought in terms of like comparing it to everything else on the list for me.
You know, for how popular things like Star Wars and Star Trek and other like sci-fi things are, and we've got no problem doing like zombies and all that type of stuff, but it's like, I'm surprised at how the show has not quite caught on with a larger audience. And I wonder if it is just a more niche, very like genre forward show, and that's kind of where it will exist, or if Apple TV tries to make more of a push for it as one of its kind of tentpoles, because it certainly has the scale. It's got the performances. It's got the world building, like we've talked about. But then, when you sit down with friends to talk about what they're watching, it's like
nobody's
watching this. Like I was just talking to people over the weekend, and it's like everybody's watching Fargo right now.
Yeah,
a lot of people are watching A Murder at the End of the World.
Yeah,
people are watching stuff that we're talking about, and then it's like you bring up Foundation, and they're like, "Where's that now?"
Yeah, I think sci-fi can be a harder sell, but it's just odd because, to your point, Foundation does have all of the mainstream characteristics that you would expect for a show that could break through.
Right.
Like, it
right.
has violence, right. it has some sexuality and sexiness, it's got mystery, it's got weird AI, robot, technology shit, it's got religion tied in, it's got mathematics, like, it's got a lot going for it. And it also, on top of that, has phenomenal character actors. And that's where like the show really elevates itself to me. And like I've harped nonstop for those of you who have ridden with us through our Foundation coverage about how good Lee Pace is, and Jared Harris is like one of my favorite living actors currently. Yep. So, and then like you said, what's her name? Did we forget? Laura Byrne is awesome, awesome, awesome as Demerzel as well. So yeah, Foundation ended up a little bit higher for me, but also on my list at number four.
Okay, so what was your number seven?
Beef.
And my number seven was Foundation. You had it at four. What's your number six?
The Great season three.
Okay.
So the final season of The Great.
Yep.
I did get the chance to watch it. It was as great as all the other seasons of The Great.
Mm-hmm.
Albeit very bittersweet
in
the end because now it's gone. And
they
could have gone longer with this one.
I know they could have. I absolutely know they could have. I bet that they wanted to.
I hope they did.
Nicholas Holt, Nell Fanning, I think are both pretty like not what I would call like full on A-listers, but like they're getting work
right there though. Yeah.
They're getting work in other places. And so maybe it was perhaps they were too expensive or too kind of hard to schedule. And that kind of factored into but yeah, now it's like, I want to ride for this show so hard. But now it's like, it feels almost, you know, it's like, well, what's the point? There's no more seasons. So.
Right, yeah.
But again, like that seriously, like I think we both had it number one after its first season, which I think was 2 years ago. And I mean, we loved this show, and I've never recommended this show to anybody and had them come back and been like, yeah, it wasn't for us.
I could see like a for lack of a better term, very prude TV watcher. People who are like, this is too much cursing and sex. You know what I mean? But I love cursing and sex. So that's huge for me.
Yeah.
The Great was great. I mean, it really was, and it never had like a point where I was like, ah, they're kind of losing it. You know what I mean? Through the 3-season run. Phenomenal show. If you've never watched The Great, it's on Hulu. Go check out all 3 seasons. Maybe they'll revive it if you go watch it.
Yeah, I would love. Yeah, pick it up, Netflix. Come on, do it.
What was your number six?
My number six is The Last of Us.
Okay.
Yeah. I went back and forth on this one, where to put it. I think that I could have switched this out and put it top five and had Fargo 6. Again, probably recency bias factoring in there. Obviously the third episode of Last of Us is one of the best episodes of television.
I don't even think
it's that's not really up for debate. This show had no business being as good as it was.
I agree with that.
I thought that Bella Ramsey and Pedro Pascal were awesome in this. Also, let's just stop and, you know, we got to give credit to Pedro Pascal. I don't know if you saw his episode of SNL or any of this, or maybe just any of the sketches like on YouTube or whatever.
I might have.
Or if you've seen this guy in the public eye at all. But like the range that this man has.
Oh, yeah.
Like he's kind of like a saucy dude. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And so for him to be able to also carry out this like unbelievably gruff and tough guy, and then of course we know him as like as Oberyn Martell from Game of Thrones, where he kind of like bridges the gap between the two, right? Like this dude just has incredible range. He's an awesome actor. This was unbelievable to have at the beginning of the year as an incredible HBO Sunday night show that everybody was watching and that everybody was tuning into. And the reason that it's not like top five for me is just because here in this top six, it's just like, what could I not get enough of, or what like really elevated itself from like a content standpoint?
Sure.
And we kind of had this conversation a little bit with Jury Duty Silo, and I think it's one that's going to recur as we get here into the top of the list. Again, I loved this show. It looked awesome. The performances were great. I thought it had a couple of low spots, but I can't wait to see what happens in season two.
This one ended up in my top five.
Yep.
I won't say where yet.
Okay.
But just to speak on it now, you mentioned episode 3. That was probably the all-around best episode of TV this year. And that, by itself, bumped the show up a lot for me. There were points of The Last of Us where I was like, yeah, okay, well. But in the end, I think it was the final show in the most ridiculous run that HBO has maybe ever had in terms of one show rolling into the next, rolling into the next, rolling into the next, rolling into the next. And it was held up against some of the best TV we have seen in like the likes of Succession and The White Lotus. And I think if this was like standalone on, you know, some other network or something, we probably would have appreciated it more. I totally agree with you that it had no business being as good as it was. Like,
yeah. I mean, video game adaptations are incredibly difficult, and I know that this one is heralded like as like one of the video games with the best storytelling.
Yeah, if not the ever.
Like, so if there was one where it was possible, this was it. And yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a great ride. It was a lot of fun to talk about.
It was.
And it had excellent performances plus one standout episode. And so I think it absolutely is deserving of a spot wherever it may fall on this list.
Craig Mazin and Neil Druckmann did a phenomenal job. And I think Craig Mazin is one of the most talented people working in TV at this point. And so I'm going to have a hard time not enjoying anything he does. Anyway, yeah, it ended up in my top five. Before we jump into our top five, Barrett... Yep. This bustling holiday season, you might be looking for nutritious, convenient meals to keep you energized on jam-packed days. Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal delivery service, can help you fuel up fast for breakfast, lunch, and dinner with chef-prepared, dietitian-approved, ready-to-eat meals delivered straight to your door. You'll save time, eat well, and stay on track with your healthy lifestyle while tackling all your holiday to-dos. Today's episode, of course, is brought to you by Factor. Got 2 kids under 5 at home, a business to run, and a total lack of cooking skills. So all of 2023, I've been relying on Factor to feed me and keep me full.
Feed me.
Cross meal prepping off your list this holiday season with Factor. Skip the meal planning, grocery shopping, chopping, prepping, and cleaning up, and get Factor's fresh, never frozen meals delivered to your door. They're ready in just 2 minutes. All you have to do is heat and enjoy. Looking for calorie-conscious options over the holidays that don't skimp on flavor? Try delicious dietitian-approved calorie-smart meals with around or less than 550 calories per serving. Or need an extra boost to support your wellness goals and feel your best during the holidays? Try Protein Plus meals with 30 grams of protein or more per serving. With Factor, you can also rest assured you're making a sustainable choice. They offset 100% of their delivery emissions, source 100% renewable electricity for their production and sites and offices, and feature sustainably sourced seafood in their meals. This December, get Factor and enjoy eating well without the hassle. Simply choose your meals and enjoy fresh, flavor-packed meals delivered to your door ready in just 2 minutes. No prep, no mess. Head to factormeals.com/OCC50 and use code OCC50 to get 50% off. That's code OCC50 at factormeals.com/OCC50 to get 50% off. And you can see the URL for that deal and the code in the description of our episode. Let's jump into our top five here. My number five, and this is a controversial call. It's The Wheel of Time, season two.
Wow.
On Prime.
All right.
My wife talked me into this.
Yeah.
It was in my honorable mentions. didn't even make the list. And then she talked it all the way up to number five. And I know she has no idea. So she's listening right now and probably extremely excited. Because when I went through my honorable mentions, she was like, what? You loved it. And I was like, did I? She was like, you wouldn't shut up about it on OCC. And like the fucking Trolloc jokes extended through the rest
of
the
year.
I was so I went and I thought back. And like, I think in part I was judging it harshly because you didn't watch it and you were out on it. So like immediately I've lost like, you know, some luster there. And because we didn't cover it episode by episode, like I was just kind of like, I don't know. I love The Wheel of Time, but fuck it. It's an honorable mention. And then me and her had this fight and then it turned into like, by the time I was done, because I was judging it, then I was like, okay, fine. Let's say I put it on the list. Was it better than The Gilded Age season two? Then was it better than, and I went down the list and like I ended up at fucking five and I was like, damn it. She's right. And she was right, man. Look, The Wheel of Time is not for everybody. It is definitely like almost over the top fantasy at some points. There's a lot of magic. The Trollocs are ridiculous.
For the fantasy heads out there.
But to their credit, very few Trollocs in season two, Barrett.
Trollocs.
Very few Trollocs, and that was a huge win. It was a great, great season of TV. It has great performances in it, and it is a really, really fun show that also, similarly to Foundation, it looks great. It looks really, really great. So, yeah, shockingly, The Wheel of Time season two cracked my top five and is at the number five slot.
All right, so I had Fargo at five. What's your number four?
Foundation season two.
All right.
And then what's your four?
My four is Barry. This was the final season of Barry.
Oh, yeah, baby.
Yeah.
Season four, right?
Season four. Yeah. Season four and final season of Barry. And I mean, this show was like, it's really wild how this show went from like something that was, it never stopped being funny, but my God, did it get progressively dark.
Yeah.
I think Bill Hader has probably written his meal ticket to do whatever he wants to do after Barry. Like the way that, you know, I've listened to interviews with him and read stuff about like his kind of like process of how he approaches the whole thing. And he's such a film buff. He's such a historian. He's watched so many movies and is such a fan of the medium in general that like what he can do with a camera and the genre angles that he takes and the way that some stuff is just like, some episodes are like the best action movie you've ever seen, and the next one will be the creepiest horror, you know, type stuff, and then the other one will just be like a two-hander marriage drama. Like it's really, really wild. This final season was nuts. It had reveals, it had twists, it had amazing performances, and it ended in a phenomenal way as well. It was. Again, it's funny, we talk about Fargo, which is, you know, famously based on the Coen brothers movie of the same name and like borrows a lot of the formula, which is like this very absurdist, dark humor, kind of like cut with ultra violence and, you know, really like kind of like dark themes about people in society in general. And Barry kind of like took that and like boiled it into like a character study of two people, basically. And it's one of the coolest things. It's one of the most unique things that's been on TV in the last 10 years. And it kind of like, you know, I feel like, I don't know if the door is fully closed on it, but this also kind of felt like it wrapped up a little bit of what was a nice run with the shows like Fleabag and Atlanta and Barry, where, you know, I think people will continue to do amazing things in half-hour blocks. We're going to get to another one that's even higher on my list. But, like, the kind of, like, what is this? What can it be? Is it a comedy? Is it a farce? Is it a drama? And I mean, like, this show is the reason why the Emmys can't get anything right, basically, anymore.
Yeah.
You know, so I just think it's kind of, like,
very fair.
I think it's kind of paradigm shifting. I think it pushed the limits. I think it kind of minted a visionary creator in Bill Hader, and I think it will be something that I think about for a really long time to come.
This is at the top of my things to watch list. Barry was almost so up my alley that when I watched season one, at like some point season two came out, and it was so up my alley that I was just like, no, I don't need to do that right now. Like, I know I'm going to watch this at some point. So it like slipped down my priorities list, and I'm excited to get in there because I've heard great things. Obviously, everything you just said makes me even more excited to get in there. But I love your comparison to Fargo because it really is interesting. That genre right there is just, it sort of has a little bit of everything in terms of what we really like. So I'm stoked Barry was on your list. My number four was Foundation season two.
Yeah.
My number three is The Last of Us season one. What's your number three?
My number three is Dave.
I knew it was going to be in your top five.
Yeah.
Dave season three.
Dave season three.
It's on my honorable mentions, and it's only in my honorable mentions because I haven't finished.
Okay.
And I wasn't like, unlike with Fargo and The Gilded Age, my confidence level that it will maintain the pace it has through, I think I'm on like episode five.
Yeah.
Wasn't as high just because it's fucking Dave.
Yeah,
You never know, man. The next episode could be about a milking table, and, you know?
And I will say, this show is this high on my list because it's very, very personal to me. This is like, it took me 3 months to watch this season because Laura won't watch this show with me.
Yeah.
She is completely out on Dave. She finds him disgusting and repulsive.
Sad. I mean, he is disgusting and repulsive. That's part of the point.
As you just mentioned, I'm pretty sure we the second episode of the entire series is the milking table.
Yeah, that'll lose him.
Yeah. And then there's the floppy leg sex doll thing. And in this episode, he's wearing in this season, he wears an entire latex underwear condom thing.
Absolutely, you know what I mean? Absurd.
Like it's
plot
it's,
line there.
It's insane. It is insane. But Dave, and we've talked about this a bunch every time this show comes up, like Dave is basically the same age as us.
Uh-huh.
He grew up in suburban Philadelphia, worshiping rappers like Kanye West, and made it his entire personality and what he wanted to do and like built his persona off of it. But he's a suburban white kid. And so like the relatability factor is nuts. He like when he does kind of childhood flashbacks or when he goes into his bag for like nostalgia factors from his kind of upbringing from his teen years, I'm just like, I know that. I know what that is. I know who that is. I know the people he's hanging out with. I know what they're feeling. Like, I know everything about it. And so this show just like it felt like it was made for me. It felt like it was made for us. It just taps that button. And so that, like, I don't expect this show to be high on everybody's list because it is obscure and weird and sometimes too gross and all of that. And I will also add, I didn't love every episode of this season. This season also had some, I wouldn't call them lows because I didn't dislike any episodes this season, but there's some stuff that doesn't work as well as other things. But then like episode three, the one with the music video shoot, it's called like Harlington Avenue or something.
Yeah, where he goes home.
Where he goes home to do the video shoot, and like his high school crush / best friend / sort of girlfriend like makes an appearance.
Yeah.
Is probably a top five episode of television for me this year.
Phenomenal.
It was phenomenal. And then what you're saying, like, I don't know if this show would have landed this high because basically episodes three, after that episode, it's good, but not as good. And then they get to 8, 9, 10, which feature cameos and kind of a lot more than cameos. Really,
they're just characters.
They're just characters on the show. The cameo is really a very famous rapper. It's not really a spoiler. It's Drake. But the actual characters in the show are Rachel McAdams and Brad Pitt. And the finale with Brad Pitt is, I cannot believe they pulled it off. Like, I can't believe, like, you're just watching it and you are so floored by the fact that Brad Pitt is so game to do what he's doing on screen in this episode.
Oh my
in
God,
episode.
I can't wait, dude.
That is just, I felt like I was floating off the couch watching this. I told you, I just said, Laura won't watch this show. I dragged her in. I was like, you have to see this.
Yeah.
You have to see what is going on in this episode. And on top of all this, it's the timing is nice too, because it was just announced that Peanuth, the album that is the joke that is at the center of like the last three, all three seasons of Dave, is finally coming.
Oh my God.
Like, it's
huge.
Going to have the all the songs that we love from the last three seasons of TV. It's coming later in January.
Yes.
He dropped the Mr. McAdams single on the platforms already,
yes,
which is an absolute banger. And I just, it's wild what he's doing. It's really, really wild what he's doing. I can't, like, Jack Harlow is another cameo in this episode, which is another great one, because it's like Jack Harlow kind of swooped in and became the actual rapper version of what Dave Byrd kind of, I think, wanted to be.
I mean, a little bit. I think he plays that up more on the show than is the case in reality, because Dave / Lil Dicky, there is way more comedy in his angle and in his persona.
Yes.
Like, his whole thing is like that he has a weird dick.
Right.
Like, and Jack Harlow has no version of that.
Yes. And if Lil Dicky really had wanted to be nothing but a rapper, then I think he had to know that going about it with the joke angle
wasn't gonna work long term. It's almost like you can't tell if he's a parody or he's serious.
Yeah. So the fact that he did pivot from that to like he is actually extremely talented at rapping and writing lyrics and otherwise, and the way that he turned it into like his own little Atlanta / Curb Your Enthusiasm thing is just like, I wish more people were talking about this, and I think they don't, because at the end of the day, there's like $20,000 sex dolls and milking tables. You know what I mean?
Maybe. I do think it's probably more talked about than you're judging it against, like the fact that you feel like it was made for you. And I totally understand that, but I also do think Dave gets a ton of shine.
Okay.
I felt a similar frustration when I dove into season 3 and we were also doing season 2 of The Bear.
Yeah.
And people wouldn't shut up about The Bear.
Yeah.
Oh, The Bear. Oh, The Bear's so good, chef. And I was like, dude, Dave is just as good as this.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Dave is as good, if not better, than The Bear. And then, of course, we finished The Bear season 2, and I did not finish Dave season 3, so I kind of broke off on my argument. And I'm not saying The Bear wasn't great. You'll see. I thought it was great in a minute. The point is, Dave is that good, and I think it's not just that it's made for you and me in very specific pieces of it, like the milking table, apply to our lives directly. It does a lot. Like, he's super, super raw and honest about a ton of shit that most people won't talk about.
Yep.
Like, the way he pulls conversations about race, mental health, sexuality, like all aspects of serious society into a fucking dumb show about a rapper named Lil Dicky is incredibly hard to pull off, man. Like, he deserves so much fucking credit, and I guarantee if I had finished the season, I would have slotted it somewhere in my top 10. I just felt weird doing that, and no, Dave is awesome, man. I would say the only people I won't recommend Dave to fall into that kind of prude category,
right.
Where it's like, and I get it. It's not for, like, especially if you're not a straight dude, a lot of the comedy is going to hit weird. You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to think it's as funny as we do. And I totally understand that. It's fine. But all in all, I think the show goes to a lot of different places that are super impressive. Yeah. And that motherfucker is crazy talented, bro. Yeah. He's one of the people that I look at and I'm like, there is nothing I could do to pretend I'm not jealous of you and what you've done with your career.
Yeah.
What was that, number 3?
So that was my number 3. So you're number 2?
So my number 2 is The Bear season 2.
That's what I have at number 2 as well.
Yeah. I mean, like, I couldn't run away from this. There's few things that I watch every year that are so powerful that it's like genuinely moving and goes on to affect my day or my week.
Yeah.
And The Bear did that several times in this season. I mean, Forks is one of the best things I have ever seen.
Yeah, we obviously mentioned the episode 3 from The Last of Us, which the name of that episode is slipping my mind right now.
I don't know. I want to call it Strawberries, but that's not it.
That's a good name for it, though. And that was the runaway best episode of television this year, right up until Forks dropped.
Yeah.
And that, they are neck and neck. And, you know, which one was the greater achievement? I'm not really sure. A lot of it comes down to the conversation that you brought up with Silo and Jury Duty, which we're about to talk about again when we get to a number one, which sounds like it'll be the same for both of us. Something inside of me just leans towards the Last of Us episode because it was longer and it had like a little bit more drama.
It's called Long Long Time.
Thank you. Yeah.
They should have named it Strawberries.
Strawberries. I like that name. Long Long Time / Strawberries.
It was the song. Long Long Time.
But I think that Forks like hit harder with me. I think it actually made me more emotional. It was
maybe more upset. That was like pure anxiety right there.
Well, no, that's just Fishes.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. Sorry. Yeah. Forks is the one with Taylor Swift.
That's right. Forks is Cuzzo's cousin's, his journey as a Stodge.
I'm mixing these two together in my mind because those two episodes.
They're two sides of the coin.
And those were without a doubt two of the best three episodes I watched of TV this year.
Yeah. So, we talked about, we're talking a lot of like subsequent seasons here. Season two was better than season one, I think.
Yeah, it was a build. It stepped forward.
It did more. It built. It went to different places. We had the bottle episodes, when the pastry chef goes to
Europe.
Goes to Copenhagen, and when Sydney goes and does the little like tour of all the Chicago restaurants as she's like kind of working on the chaos menu.
That was tight.
Then we got to Forks and Fishes.
Yeah.
So I think that we both kind of like bristled at how much people were obsessing over this show. And then season two like went right in there and it was just like, I kind of am that good.
Yeah. I finished season one and was annoyed. I was like, don't get me wrong. Good TV, really good TV, but it didn't like make me want to change my life. You know what I mean? Like that's what season two did. It gets to a point where it's just like there was such an incredible amount of different things to enjoy between the stories, and then all of the different characters you end up invested in. There's like six people on that show I'm rooting for at this point, or I want to know more about. The Bear was as good as it was billed. Like everybody that talked it up was right. I mean, it's rare to see something this critically acclaimed get to that level of mainstream where like everyone you know is watching it from every walk of life.
Right.
Like that's rare to achieve. It was awesome, man. That was my number two. What's your number one?
My number one, I'm guessing it's the same as yours, Succession.
It'd be pretty weird if either of us left Succession's final season off our list. Yeah.
How close was it between Succession and The Bear for you?
Not as close as you would think.
Okay.
I mean, like the final season thing gave it so much more credence to be there at the number one spot.
This is again where your decision making in Silo versus Jury Duty kind of weighed for me here too.
Yeah,
where I was just like, this is a harder show to make.
What's the bigger achievement
with longer episodes? And maybe not necessarily more to say, but kind of like broader themes, I would say.
Bigger themes.
Yeah. And the fact that it, like, I won't lie to you, and I think voters oftentimes do this at award show as well, like, this show is probably... I think it's still too soon to say it's my favorite show of all time, but it's... for sure a top three show of all time for me. Like, and that means something. And they closed out this final season and they made gutsy, ballsy decisions. And I thought they wrapped it up in a great way. I thought that I just trusted the showrunners in a way that like, I trust nobody as much as I trust Jesse Armstrong and his staff.
Do you remember going into season four, we were getting hyped about it and you were talking about what you just said, that it's one of your favorite shows ever made.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, come on, Barrett, like get, The old man won't die. He's just been hanging on season after season after season. There's not even going to be a succession at this rate. And then season four played out, and I was like, I'm sorry, I was not familiar with your game. That was, you were correct. I mean, it is one of the best shows ever made. I think anybody who knows TV and storytelling that watched it from front to back would agree on some level with that. Like, it was unbelievable. And to close it, like, I was getting annoyed for sure that, like, Brian Cox's character, fucking Daddy Warbucks, would not die. Like, he kept being the central focus of what, like, you know what I mean? And then they finally went and did everything they had to do with season four, and it was un-fucking real to watch it unfold. I thought the show got better after what happened in episode three, not worse. And to end it in the way that they did, where, like, I didn't see a lot of complaining about the finale. No. And if, because I don't think any of us knew what to expect. Everybody was in, like, one camp or the other. Will they, won't they? And it ends up the way it ends up, and you just kind of, you sit back. It reminded me of, like, the Sopranos finale, in that when it ended, nobody moved from their couch for a minute. Right. You're like, holy shit. You're just kind of, your jaws dropped because you're so in awe of what you've just witnessed. It was amazing, man, and it had so many great characters that were so easy to either really love or really, really hate, or both.
I mean, how about this for season four? Jeremy Strong as Kendall Roy, I think, is like a Pantheon television character, and Kieran Culkin as Roman, like, outshined him in season four.
Yeah, which is, like, nobody would have seen that coming.
Right, like one of the greatest dramatic television characters ever, and like he like almost got beat this year. You know, it was like neck and neck.
It was character development based.
Yes, and also it was like the elevation of one performance that kind of like matched it to the other. Not that it was necessarily like better or beyond, but like that's the type of thing that happened in season four that I think just was like that
it's like wow.
That just that kept on pushing the show forward and kind of cementing it as
fucking Skarsgård was great, man. I mean, it was something to behold, and they did it justice with the final season. I'm glad they cut it when they did.
Yep.
And I know there were people who were like, oh, I could have done a season five. Yeah, but look, I thought they stretched this show just right.
They did. Like, you kind of mentioned that you were feeling some frustration with Logan kind of sticking around. And I think that, you know,
it paid off.
What you were feeling is like that, like, okay, how many times are we going to do the same song and dance?
Yeah, basically.
Right? And so that's... And I agree with that. And I think that's probably why they did decide to maybe end it a season early, is because they were going to run into like diminishing returns if every single season, like, Kendall's just back thinking that he has another shot.
Yeah.
You know, you do have to kind of like put some closure on that at some point.
Yeah. I prefer the song and dance ends with someone taking a baseball bat to the record player. And that's what happened in the season. It was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
And this is an example of one that I can't wait to go back and rewatch. And in the end, look, my top five really reminded me, like you and I had opposite sentiments in what occurred to us making our list. Cause I was like, God damn, there was like historic TV this year still.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the thing I think got more screwed in the mix of the whole strike was the movies. The movie side of thing got a lot more messed up, which, by the way, we're not going to have time to discuss movies, so we're going to have to do that on Patreon on Thursday.
Okay, all right.
So we'll keep movies for patreon.com/oysters, clams, cockles, and for everybody who wants to tune in to hear Barrett and I talk movies, it's a much less substantial conversation, I would note.
If you have listened to this podcast at all this year, then it will not come as a surprise to you what my number one movie is, because I saw it twice in theaters. So
I don't think any of us are going to struggle with guessing that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But before we move on to closing up today's show, I wanted to make sure we get in my honorable mentions.
Yes.
All right. So Dave season three, which I mentioned, Jury Duty, which I mentioned, Love and Death on HBO was really, really good.
Okay.
I highly recommend it.
Is that the Jesse Plemons?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Didn't quite crack my top 10, but it was right there. What We Do in the Shadows, I thought, was season five, I believe.
Yep.
Which is on Hulu. Got its fastball back. Was really, really great. I didn't like some of the things about the way they ended it.
Yeah.
But all in all, really great comedy season. Perry Mason season two, which was the final season, it turns out, of Perry Mason, was great. I thought if you liked Perry Mason season one, season two was even better. I Think You Should Leave with Tim Robinson season
three
on Netflix. He's the fucking funniest shit I've... Dumbest, funniest, goofiest fucking comedy of all time.
Well, how about the fact that he is elevated to, like, full-on, like, meme lord? Like,
yeah.
I Think You Should Leave is... Every single clip is, like, is a meme now, which is pretty significant.
I love the guy. I'm a huge fan of what he's done. And taking really, really, really weird comedy and making it mainstream is a feat in and of itself. And then Black Mirror Season 6. I watched it. I really liked it. It wasn't going to make the top 10, but it was. It deserved an honorable mention. My disappointments were Yellowjackets Season 2.
Yep.
That was dog shit. And The Changeling on Apple TV+. Those are the only two things I watched where I was like, this should have been good. So it was disappointing when it was quite indeed the opposite, bad. So like, Yellowjackets, I don't even want to go back for Season 3. I probably will. But it stinks. And then The Changeling was ass. I can't even recommend that.
Like, well, now you
don't watch The Changeling.
There's one show that you've not mentioned that I half expected to crack your top 10. So I do have to ask.
It's on my I watched it list.
Where did The Idol end up for you?
Oh, fuck, dude. I completely forgot about The Idol. The Idol would be in honorable mentions for me. I fucking loved it, dude. I don't care anymore. I'm not ashamed. I'm not afraid anymore. The Idol was awesome. Look, I get why it doesn't need to exist. I get why people were disgusted by it. I understand that some of the messaging was maybe a little bit opaque, but I fucking loved it. It was ridiculous. Like, you need ridiculous, overly sexualized craziness in the HBO mix. It's part of the brand.
I threw it on my honorable mentions just because it gave us something to talk about. I mean, this was a massive swing. And, like, I want to watch a documentary about this eventually, like, about what exactly happened with the first cut of this and the other showrunner slash director.
All the controversy.
All the controversy. Like, I don't know if we harped on this enough, but you know that, like, they shot all of those interiors and all of the house stuff at The Weeknd's actual house.
Yeah.
Because they were out of money.
Yeah.
They scrapped pretty much everything they had, and they needed a free place to shoot.
So he was like, we can do it at one of my cribs, his L.A. house.
I mean, that shit is wild. It was insane. It was truly unhinged, but it was, it was something.
Definitely something.
That's better than, I don't know, that's better than some lame, like, you know,
Yellowjackets.
I would rather somebody go for something than play it safe.
Fat tongue.
Yeah. And there were some, unfortunate moments in the series, to be sure.
There were moments where Tedros seemed, which is the character that The Weeknd plays, seemed like maybe the worst character in the history of TV. It kind of came around in the end a little bit in terms of making sense.
I agree with you. And I think The Weeknd, I don't know if they shot it linearly or not. I mean, that would be surprising if they did, since almost nothing is shot like that. But maybe they just figured out the story a little bit more in the editing bay. But like, after the first two episodes, I think I came on this podcast, or maybe it was Patreon, and wondered if The Weeknd was the worst actor that had ever appeared on an HBO show.
And it was a fair question at that point.
And he kind of grew into the character a little bit by the end of the show, and was a little bit more believable. But it had to be mentioned on this year end list because
I'm so happy you did.
It was a part of the zeitgeist. That's for sure. I had Silo on my honorable mentions, and then I had another Apple TV Plus show. It was the Rose Byrne Seth Rogen comedy Platonic. Not a top 10 show, but I just thought I would mention it because it was a pretty interesting, enjoyable watch. Those two have great chemistry, and so if they want to get together and do stuff like that, it is in that vein of Neighbors. Like, I'm probably going to watch it, and I'm probably going to have fun doing it. So I just tossed that one out there too.
Speaking of chemistry, Lessons in Chemistry, my wife has been watching. She fucking loves it. I made it through the first couple episodes with her, and frankly, it was very, very good. I saw that show make a lot of people's lists, and that's another one I want to make sure gets mentioned.
The only thing left for me to mention on here is just, obviously, I don't include documentary and Unscripted on here.
Right.
But the Beckham doc was one of the best things I watched.
That was really fun, dude. Yeah. It was a really fun watch. There's one thing, since you mentioned one that we otherwise would have forgotten, I have one. It's in my, and this is what I thought you were going to mention.
Okay.
It's in my I watched it list. Hijack.
Hijack
season one, man. Look, wasn't a disappointment because I didn't really have expectations going in. It definitely wasn't going to make anywhere near my top 10.
No, that's not a top 10 show.
No, but I watched it.
I watched
it. And that's it. I watched it. Yeah, I fucking watched it. And yeah, the other I watched it was the Fall of the House of Usher. Mm. Like, I watched it. I don't know what I think about it. I don't hate it, but I don't love it.
Yeah.
And so that's where it is. And then my list of things to watch is The Righteous Gemstones, because
yep.
I've heard that show has just kind of continued to elevate itself as well. I'm two seasons behind. Also, Barry season 4, The Curse on Showtime.
Yeah, that's yes. Yep. Yeah.
Reservation Dogs on Hulu, which I keep seeing this get talked up, but I'm like, I feel like it's on like season 4. It just
had its third and final season.
Okay, so that's it. Three seasons to watch. Gen V keeps getting hyped. The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, Shrinking on Apple TV Plus. Mm-hmm. Please stop recommending this to me. I know. I'm aware. Slow Horses on Apple TV Plus.
Yes, yeah, I should have mentioned
and
that.
And these
one.
Are all shows that had new seasons this year.
Yep,
okay. So
yep.
Ted Lasso season 3, I will watch at some point. I'm not excited about it, and it just needs to be on here. And then For All Mankind season 4. Okay. I started For All Mankind season 1. I see where the issues are.
It's bad. Season 1 is bad.
And I see.
Even fans of the show, I think, will acknowledge that.
That being said, knowing that, as I'm watching it, has been super helpful because I can see where the momentum is and the possibilities are and how this show could be great. And I've heard it gets extremely good in seasons 2 and 3.
2 and 3, yeah, that's what I've heard.
And then
as well.
Season 4 was this year. So, yeah, For All Mankind is the final one on my list of things to watch that dropped in 2023 list. Barrett, you got anything else?
I mentioned a bunch of ones that you said. I also mentioned Daisy Jones and the Six. And
I didn't care for that.
No? Okay.
Wife loved it.
Special Ops Lioness, I mentioned. I'm looking through my list right now. You said Slow Horses. Back to the Dock. I need to catch up on 100 Foot Wave. 100 Foot Wave season 2.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know if I can do that one. That's a big wave, man. If it was like 50 Foot Wave, I might be in.
Yeah, but I think you pretty much covered everything else. Yep.
Oh, well, those are our top 10.
The Gold is another one that I heard about. But
documentary-wise?
No. It's just, yeah, that's just
show.
If it's on Paramount Plus, I haven't seen it. That's the one streaming service I don't have at the moment. That's the Gold, The Curse, Lioness, all Paramount Plus shows. I need to get it.
Can I just give you my login?
Yeah, but it's fine. I'll just get it. It's a write-off, Jerry.
Well, that's our best of 2023 in terms of TV, including honorable mentions, disappointments, and I watched it. and our list of things that we want to get to that came out this year as well. We hope you enjoyed it. Thank you for listening with us all year long. Again, later this week, Thursday, on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles, Barrett and I will drop our best movies of 2023.
Will we put out a list? Will we put these on a list and put them on the
they'll be on the Patreon.
Instagram? The Instagram?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. Definitely on Patreon. Maybe on the Gram. We can do a list of the TV shows on the Gram. I watched like 22 TV shows this year, something crazy like that.
Yeah.
Way less movies, man.
Yeah.
Way less movies. I watched like 6 movies. So, but I'm excited to discuss those.
I watched 6 2023 movies.
Yeah. I'm talking 2023 release movies. Yeah, I watched a ton more movies than that. These are the ones that came out in 2023. I will say this for my list of movies. It also factors into a best of, but there are only 6 of them, not 10. Then there are honorable mentions, and then there are disappointeds, and then there are I watched its.
The problem with the movies for me is that a lot of the good movies come out late in the year.
Yeah.
Because they're gearing up for award season. And so, like, 2 of the best movies that I watched in the calendar year 2023 were movies that technically came out in 2022.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
But I'll save any more.
Can't use them.
I'll save any more conversation for the Patreon.
Can't use them.
Keep them wanting a little extra.
Yeah. Support our sponsors. This week we had Factor, factormeals.com/OCC50. Use code OCC50 to get 50% off. If you're looking for some OCC merch this holiday season, maybe you get some extra moolah from your family, friends, or what have you, or maybe you've got a family or friend that is a fan of our show, go to bolinmedia.com/shop and get yourself some merch. For more from me, Ross Bolin, check out the Ross Bolin podcast wherever podcasts are played. For more from Mr. Dudley, follow him on the Instagram machine at Barrett Dudley, where he will keep you updated on all the things he's got going on. Like I said, again, We'll be back later this week on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles with our top movies of the year and to do a little more wrap-up on 2023. It's been a fun one, a weird one, admittedly, with all the strikes and the lack of hype and the kind of directionless feel to the whole of Hollywood, but we survived it, and that's what's important. We did it together, Clam Fam. We really did. Thank you for being here today.
A good one.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. Until next time, peace.